In this episode of the Business and Justice series, Sib Sibanda interviews Shemaine Smith, the founding director of Infundo Consulting. She speaks candidly about how she put people before projects in her work in uplifting rural communities through education.
Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique context on the African continent.
Welcome to this Ziwani interview, which is part of our Business and Social Justice podcast series. I'm joined today by Shemaine Smith, who is the director of Infundo. Welcome, Shemaine. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, our topic, Shemaine, today is Think People, Not Projects. And I'm looking forward to hearing your wisdom on the subject. But before we dive into that, please tell us a bit about Infundo and if you will, trace some of the main contours of your business journey for us.
Sure. So I started Infundo in 2007 with a friend of mine at that time. And it was really started as a vehicle for social projects. And we had started with a whole lot of social projects already. And then we felt it was time to frame it into some kind of organizational vehicle or create a place where people could begin to trust us. Right. So that's really how it started. And we started with some projects in community, Joburg. And the name of Infundo came about because I spoke to one of the guys and I said, we're working in schools. And I said to him, so what is it that we do? And he said, oh, Infundo. And I thought, oh, okay, cool. So
as in lessons or teachings.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so I didn't know it at that point. So I went and I Googled it. And when I Googled it, I misspelt it. So Infundo, an N, actually means to pour out or bless.
Wow.
And it's used in church services in Latin rites. So I thought, oh, okay. Maybe God is in charge of this. Yeah, maybe God's more in charge of this than our bit us. And so the name stuck in and we used it from there. It just felt like a really good balance between education, training, skills, as well as some sense of having come from God, you know, and needing to call out.
Okay. So Shemaine, can you just tell me, sort of trying to get my head around what it is is a business, so what does the business actually do?
So we set up as a PTY, we're not an NPO and we don't get donations. And we started as a company that would work for clients or organizations, really taking business strategy into community. Uh-huh. So our first big clients is a rural business, and they knew that the sustainability of their community was completely linked to the sustainability of their business. And so they said, please, if you look after our community and our community thrives, we'll thrive. And when we thrive, they'll thrive. And so we really take their business strategy and their growth strategy in an area, and then we help to translate that into what the community should be receiving, but also what the community needs to look like in order for that business strategy to come to fruition.
Right. And how many communities are you working in?
So we have some ad hoc clients as well where we don't drive that, but actually we work in four mostly rural areas, three rural areas and then one peri-urban area, Joburg. And the Joburg project is nice because it means we can take teams and staff that we want to train in our methodology. And it's a nice way to do that. We can go in and do bits with them. It doesn't have a massive impact on budget, but that's kind of our learning and training ground. Mm. And then we work in the Eastern Cape, the Northern Cape, and Mpumalanga, and long-term
right.
projects.
Okay, sounds exciting. And quite clearly, yours is a people-centric business, I mean, but then I'm sure it's quite easy to find yourself in project mode where people can be somewhat overshadowed by important things like goals, budgets, outcomes, and so on. Is that something you've experienced in your journey? And if so, what lessons can you share from those experiences?
Well, I think I was really lucky. Our first big client at Infundo was a business, as I said, that wanted us to do work in the rural areas. And I said to the transformation manager at that time, I said to him, I'm only going in if we agree that we're going to work in the community for at least 5 years, because I'm not prepared to do like a hit and run. Go in, create impact, and then leave. Because actually that impact is more about what I need rather than what the community needs. And so he said, great. And I thought, oh, It worked. So we run quite long-term projects, and we've gotten to know our clients really well, and we have really deep relationships. But there's a real challenge around getting a client who wants to see return on investment when you're working with people, because so easily you can be kind of forced into creating the outcomes that yes. make your clients happy.
Yes.
And the difficulty is, who do you serve then? Do we serve our clients and their needs in order to drive change and show impact and return on investment at board level? Or do we work in community at the pace that's required there, that's more respectful and that allows for dignity and relationships to be built? Mm-hmm. So one of the things we did was start to map out behavior metrics, so that before you see return on investment, you can start to map the behaviors that are changing in the indicators.
Yes.
So that in some way you can show change without having to fabricate change and impact. But yeah, I mean, the one thing that is important is your client has to trust you.
Yeah.
So we've had to be quite intentional about being authentic, pushing back, sometimes being the voice for people who may not have a voice yet, and to actually amplify their needs in a way that creates respect and trust between the two groups. Yeah. So it's a tricky balance, but we found that if we don't get that right, then expectations are not met, and it sets up quite an unhealthy dynamic, which is actually quite destructive.
Wow. Do you know what I really love is what you're doing, what it sounds to me like done there, is you've taken something like behavior, which is normally an intangible set of business outcome, and by putting metrics against that and making it part of your sort of ROI, you're helping businesses, board, et cetera, to actually think in a more biblical way about what return on investment looks like. Was that fair to say?
Probably. I mean, if you think about Jesus' life, he didn't just say, how many miracles did I perform today? Like, how many people picked up their mats and walked away?
Yeah.
He also measured it by how people were giving away their fortune or having to make choices, how they walked in relationship with him. You know, when he was kind of towards the end, you know, prophesied a whole lot of things, and he said, you know, you're going to deny me 3 times. But he knew that that behavior would eventually shift later, and that in the denial, that wasn't the end in and of itself.
Yes.
It was the realization for a much deeper passion and enlightenment for later.
Yeah.
So everything has an intention, and every behavior that we exhibit shows us where we are. It also shows us where we could be. And often that's where the change is.
I think it's brilliant because you've put that into business language, into language boards can look at and understand, language that you can present in a board meeting and help to track progress, where in a way that you couldn't just walk into a board and say, look, we haven't achieved any of your KPIs, but I'm telling you, people are starting to change.
You know, they're nice people and they're real happy.
Yeah, sign up
for another year.
Yeah, the people are happier than when we started. So next round of funding, please. You know, you actually put it into business language. I think that's wonderfully redemptive. So well done on that. Now, it's one thing for us as redemptive business people to not think of people purely as projects, but is it fair to say that it's equally important for the people we're serving to not see themselves as part of our projects? And if so, what can we do to counter this way of thinking?
So when I was thinking through this and we talked about serving, I mean, serving is such a tricky word. I understand exactly what you're saying, and we do serve. But in many ways, you know, we need to think about the power balance that we work with when we work with people.
Right.
So as an example, if I walk into a project and we start the project and I see the project people or the beneficiaries, let's call them beneficiaries, the people that we're working with, if I see them as victims that are not able to help themselves, then in many ways, what I do is I create a container that they can't get out of. So if I'm in relationship with someone and in order to stay in relationship, they have to remain victims, then in many ways, I've created their own demise.
Right.
So one of the things that I'm very clear about, I mean, Jesus walked with his disciples. He did a whole lot of great things, as we know if we read the Bible. But he walked with them, he talked to them, he cried with them, he fought with them.
Yes.
He lived authentically in relationship. And so actually, if we think about the people that we work with and if we want to do this properly, then what we just have to do is we just have to walk with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds really simple, but it means we have to be authentic and vulnerable. We need to release them to be who they need to be. And Jesus was, in terms of his ministry, just very short. But in fact, in that time that he walked with his disciples, he embedded a whole lot of things that allowed them to take the church to where it is now.
Yeah. And just listening to that, this question pops up in my mind that I'm just wondering, listening to now, how has this changed you over the years in perhaps ways you may not even have anticipated?
So when I started this, to be fair, I was going out to save the world. I was going to do it. I had my white horse. I had my little cape, and I was going off because I knew exactly what to do.
Yeah.
And a few things happened. The one is I think I've fundamentally changed who I am. I'm very different to how I was. I had a very idealistic view, but I also didn't want to give up any power. I wasn't able to be vulnerable because being vulnerable is hard. When you're with a client, you don't want to be vulnerable. When you would beneficial, you don't want to be vulnerable because in the vulnerability, it means that they might see that you're not all you cracked up to be.
Yes.
You know, whatever you painted up, or if I put a proposal together and said I can do this, the worst thing I can do is say, sure, we have to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
So I must say, there's that. The fact that I've had to lean into God's provision, his guidance, his voice at different times, and into the people we worked with means that I think if you had to ask people, I'm probably easier with vulnerability. But in fact, that allows a lot more to happen in the work that we do. But we've also met the most amazing people. We started a meeting once with some district officials. It was actually quite funny. And this guy was, he was like one of the, right at the top of the government structures, really rural area, so very patriarchal. Is this little Chinese woman who's arriving in this community to do some work.
Yeah.
So I had my agenda, I had my notes, I knew what we had to get through. I had my stuff that I wanted them to sign, and I started, and then he just stopped me gently and he said, you might have missed a few things. Can we just stop for a second? And he said, what we're going to do is, I actually am quite involved in my church, and I would prefer to start the meeting with a prayer, but can we do that?
Wow.
And so he stuck me in my tracks, and I said, okay, sure, no problem. And he stood up, and everybody stood up in the room, and he prayed this beautiful blessing of the meeting.
Mm.
And then we sat down, and he said, okay, we're going to start all meetings like this in future. And we went through the list of things to do, but there was a different sense of who we were in the room. We'd been in an intimate space together, and those relationships are intact to this day. But thank goodness for him, because he could have seen me as an outcome or a goal in terms of a partnership.
Yes.
And what he did was he saw me as a person first.
Right.
So he got into relationship with me, and then we got the job done. But he could easily have walked away from that meeting and never spoken to me again, never answered my calls again. And then I wouldn't have known what had gone wrong. But he stopped me, and he taught me that being in relationship with him was more important than anything we had to do.
Oh, that's beautiful. What a great story. What an encouragement. But now, it's no secret, Charmaine, that we as human beings are incredibly complex and even more complicated. And any people-intensive redemptive engagement in business is going to result in burnt fingers from time to time. What are your reflections on the time that you've surely been burnt? And perhaps talk to us a bit about how those times have made you stronger or more effective.
Are you asking me to tell you all the mistakes I've made?
Yeah, please. We've got lots of people listening.
Oh, great. Okay, great. And you suckered me by telling me that I must be vulnerable first.
Well, you brought up the viewer, Charmaine.
Yeah, I know. So I burnt my fingers a few times. My biggest one was I walked into a project, obviously on my white horse, because I knew what I was doing. And also because I was pretending to know what I was doing, which is even worse. And I ran quite a big project into a school where the school wasn't actually working. And we went in and I said, it's unacceptable that this is happening. So we took all the kids, we took them away from the school. It was another room that we used, and we got tutors, and we basically taught those kids.
Yeah.
And they got through the matric exams. But what I didn't consider was why there might be a problem at the school. I never asked any questions. because I knew exactly what I needed to do. And at the end of that, the kids went back to the classroom quite resentful that their teachers hadn't taught them. On the back of that, the district came in and actually fired a whole lot of those teachers. Now, I'm not going to judge whether that was the right or the wrong thing, but the point is that there were a whole lot of people that were impacted by my decision-making on a very narrow view of the story that I had decided to kind of look at. And I didn't make the choice to ask questions. I made the choice to just act. That's why when we spoke about people, not projects, I had created in my mind on paper, it was very easy. I would do this, then these things would happen, and then get that result. Yes. And I got that result, but I got that result at the cost of a whole lot of other people.
Wow.
And that was rough. When I found out afterwards, I was devastated because that's not what I was trying to do.
Yeah. Wow. Thanks for being so vulnerable with that. And it just reinforces, doesn't it, when we're dealing with people, the importance of, I once heard it put this way, that we back into a culture. Well, someone talking about Christian mission. And so he was saying, we back into a culture. In other words, we go in as learners, not as teachers. And I think that's, as human beings, often we, especially, you know, those of us with the privilege of have more education and so on, we can tend to run into situations as teachers and forget that actually we have to learn before we can teach and share. Not so?
Absolutely. Plus, like in the example of the project, I didn't bear the cost. Other people bore the cost of my learning.
Yeah.
So it's okay. I make a decision to make a mistake and it has direct bearing on me. It was much harder for me to live with the fact that my inability to learn and unwillingness to learn actually costs other people. That doesn't feel like something that would make me sleep better at night or sure. feel proud of what I've done. And in fact, it came on the back of me patting myself on the back because I've done such a great job.
Yeah.
So really completely the opposite.
And yet you didn't give up, Charmaine, because I'm listening to that story and I'm sure there's others you could tell. And for our listeners, I'm sure they can, each one of us can look back and say, ooh, yeah, no, that was not my proudest moment. But you didn't give up. I mean, you could well have said, you know what, I gave this a good go. Not just I got burned, but a lot of people got hurt and all of that sort of thing. So you know what, I'm just going to pack away the horse and put away my flag and just go and get a regular job like everybody else and just look after myself and my family. But you didn't. So yeah, I want to commend you on that. But I do want to ask you just on the back of that, what encouragement do you give to Christian business people who were trying their best to become more people focused and no doubt are going to make mistakes, have made mistakes, are making mistakes right now in their redemptive efforts in their marketplace? What encouragement would you give to those people out of your own experience?
Yeah, I mean, there are times that I did want to give up, and I'm sure that there are ways to do business that might be easier. I might sit in a massive corporate pushing some paper around and drawing a salary.
Yeah.
But, you know, God also says that he gives us gifts and talents and we need to use them. Mm. Not for our own sake, but actually to create God's kingdom in the world. So I suppose that's one call that needs to be honored. The other one is that actually all I've had to do in my time at Infundo is become more of the person that God wants me to be. That's actually all that I've been called to do.
Right.
So whilst we do work and we do projects and I serve communities or I serve my clients, all that he's asked me to do is be in relationship with him. Continue to read his word, think, reflect, pray, leave many things up to him. But all he has said to me is just be more of what I need you to be in the world. And actually, I suppose it's not such a big task. I mean, it is big, it's complex and it's hard.
Yeah.
But actually, there's a very simple directive. The directive is to love God and love others.
Yeah.
And I guess if that's all that we have to do, to be in relationship with God and to be in right relationship, then when we want to give up, would I love God and love my neighbor as much as I can in a different setting? Maybe one day, maybe I'm called to other things, but the fundamental principle remains the same. So whether I'm a director or a floor cleaner or making coffee or whatever it is, doesn't really matter. We're all the same. We're all called to do only that.
Yes.
And And so the doing stuff, at whether we're selling boxes or whether we're selling shoes or whether we're creating projects or whether, you know, we're doing investments or whatever it is,
yeah,
ultimately, those are the only two things we have to do, which is relatively simple, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I really like what you're saying, because this is not specific to the work you do. This is for all Christian workers, that essentially we are on a journey towards, I guess, a journey of selflessness, of emptying of ourselves and I guess seeing others in the way that Christ sees them. Because if I'm self-centered, I won't be able to love or serve people in the way that I ought to. It will be maybe about my ego and my KPIs. But the flip side of it is when things go wrong and I get hurt or people get hurt, I can take it so personally that I can't even get up again. Whereas if Christ was always the center, then whether there is success or go through times of failure, there's a security and a stability in who I am, and that ability to keep getting up and to keep serving and seeing even those times of failure as part of the tool that God uses to, like you're saying, make me be more of who He wants me to be. That's it.
And if you go back to social justice is who I am in the world. Because if I don't shift my perspective around social justice and equality and equity and seeing others as God sees them, then it doesn't matter what I do.
Yeah.
That social justice will never come to be. So maybe that's actually fundamentally, it doesn't matter what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to shift our perspective in that way. Listen, Amir, I must say I'm actually quite lucky, because the projects that I started in the beginning, I had no idea what I was doing.
Right.
And I was very lucky because it allowed me, I hope none of my first times I listened, but what it did was it forced me to have a reliance on God, whereas I think if I had been best in class at what I was doing and creating, my tips only was about me and not about God.
Yep.
But many of the outcomes that, and like the relationships of this district director kind of said to me, wait, you missed different things, let me just tell you. If God hadn't placed those people in my path, I could easily have gone down a different road and created quite destructive work. But God thought, okay, she has no clue what she's doing. Let me just put people in her path and make sure that they're at the right time and the right place to guide her, because I could see her blundering around there and we better help her. So that has helped.
Yeah, you know why I think that's so good. I'm sure we've got entrepreneurs listening to this, but even people, and we've been in business for a while, there's times where perhaps God will call us to go into new ventures, things we haven't done before, and there's a great degree of vulnerability linked to that. And often we're thinking, well, I'm not so sure if I want to go there because I won't know what to do when I get there. But what I'm hearing you say is how God used that wonderfully in your situation to, I guess, work in you that humility and that dependence on Him, rather than perhaps your smart ideas and established frameworks. And I know exactly what I need to do, but that kind of heart that says, Lord, I want to see what You are doing, and just also learn from the people that You put around, and gives us that posture of humility that helps us to actually see people, value people, rather than just what those people can do for our KPIs.
I agree. And some of our frameworks have been taken by other people and kind of worked on step by step, and yet the impact hasn't been the same. And it must be that God was present somewhere. So, I mean, what joy to have some idea or sense of what's happening and really see God's hand play out. I mean, that's probably the greatest feeling, is to be working alongside God where many things happen through His grace and providence that could not have happened through me.
Indeed. Well, Charmaine, you are such a busy woman. Thank you for loving our community so much that you gave up your time, your valuable time, to share your story and insights. I've been very encouraged. I'm sure our listeners have been too. So thank you so much for doing that.
It's a pleasure. It was actually quite nice to sit back and reflect on the last 14 years with you. In a way.
Yeah. And I've no doubt we'll be seeing you again sometime in the future on this podcast. But for now, thank you and God bless.
We would love to hear your thoughts on this series. So please remember to leave a comment in the rating section after listening to the episode.
Thank you for listening today. If you would like to hear more conversations on the topic of redemptive business in Africa, Visit Ziwani's website at www.ziwani.com. That's ZIWANI.com.